Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost.
Welcome to the Lifeboat Hour, TGIF, Friday, March 27, 2015. I'm your host, Carolyn Baker, and the Lifeboat Hour is back. Alive and well. We're extremely happy for Progressive Radio Network's recovery from a very bad frozen pipe situation that ruined its former studios and forced PRN to move to another building. Excuse me. The move has been complicated, but we're happy that PRN can continue its amazing array of shows and that we are not only back on PRN, but now have a live show at a new time. As you probably know, we used to air on Sunday nights, first as a live show and then as a pre-recorded show. But this slot for a live show opened up and we took it because we love talking with you. So since we're live, we'll be taking your calls, and later in the show, I'll let you know when you can call us with your questions or comments. So before we get into the show, I want to let you know that Friday, April 10, we're going to be doing a special memorial show in honor of Mike Rupert, who passed away on April 13, 2014, and of course we'll be taking callers. I have a very special guest for that show, and I know that you're not going to want to miss it. So this week, I was thrilled to witness the release of my 2015 book, Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse, Cultivating the Relationships We Need to Thrive, published by North Atlantic Books, a division of Random House. I'm very excited about this book because it's not just another book on collapse or catastrophic climate change, but rather it's a guide for paying attention to all of the relationships in our lives and how we strengthen those relationships as we navigate them in very turbulent times. And I'd like to give you a little background on how this book came about. For the past 8 years, I've been researching and writing about the collapse of industrial civilization. For many years, as an activist, I focused on a number of separate issues that our species is confronting, and I practiced my activism in working around resolving those issues. But in 2007, I watched a documentary called What a Way to Go, Life at the End of Empire, which anyone can watch now for free online, in which I realized that we're not dealing with a host of individual problems, but rather we're dealing with a whole scenario, which is the collapse of industrial civilization. Now, I'm a former psychotherapist, and given my training, as I was looking at the collapse of industrial civilization, I began wondering how people were going to deal emotionally and spiritually with this kind of demise. So I began writing about that, and my first book on the topic was entitled Sacred Demise, Walking the Spiritual Path of Industrial Civilization's Collapse. I didn't expect that book to do well at all, given the topic, but it did. And in 2011, I decided to take Sacred Demise to the next level, and I wrote Navigating the Coming Chaos, a Handbook for Inner Transition. And that book did even better. And then I began pondering writing the kind of book that I had always wanted to write, which was a book of 365 daily reflections on a particular topic. And, of course, the topic that I was most interested in at the time was the collapse of industrial civilization. So North Atlantic Books and I decided that it would be a very, very long book if I were going to include 17 essays and 365 reflections. So the book was produced in two formats, the hard copy of Collapsing Consciously, Transformative Truths for Turbulent Times, which contains 17 essays and 52 reflections. And then we put the other 313 reflections in an e-book, which is available online, and anyone can order that book online or through North Atlantic Books' website. Well, then I began to zoom in on a particular aspect of collapse, which is the collapse of ecosystems and catastrophic climate change. I'm not going to attempt to reiterate here all of the science around climate change, because I'm sure that most of you know or are familiar with that science, but I began to understand how really dire our predicament is, and I actually went through a sea change in my thinking around collapse as a result. Now, many people want to debate whether or not the human species is going to make it, but I realize that more importantly, a more important conversation than whether or not the human species is going to make it is how we're going to live our lives no matter what our eventual destiny is. And as I continued to read and carry on my own spiritual practice, one day I encountered a quote by a radical priest named Richard Rohr, which became the heading of the introduction of my book, Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse, Cultivating the Relationships We Need to Thrive. He says, all of creation is relationship. Think about that. All of creation is relationship. In addition, my friend Guy McPherson, who writes extensively about climate science, made this statement in one of his books. At this late juncture in the age of industry, at the dawn of our day on earth, we still have love. Love for each other, love for our grandchildren and children, love for nature. In fact, one could argue it is all we have left. Well, I soon realized that my next book had to focus on some of the myriad relationships that we have with all of creation. And so it highlights 16 different kinds of relationships in our lives and how those can serve us in a time of ecological apocalypse. Now, over the last several years, I've had a life coaching practice working with people who are very concerned about our predicament and how to live their lives in relation to it. Very often, I have clients whose partners are not on board with them as far as collapse or catastrophic climate change. In fact, a partner might say to me, you know, hey, my partner or is not interested in this at all, and I just don't know what to do because I'm very distressed about this chasm that exists between me and my partner. Or maybe it's another family member, you know, like a son or a daughter or an in-law. And so I knew as a result of my conversations with these folks that I had to put a chapter in this book about that topic. And so the very first chapter in this book is Loving, Living, and Preparing with a Reluctant Partner. It's kind of everything you need to know about being in that situation. Now, of course, I also encounter a lot of people who ask me what to tell their children and how to raise their children with our planetary predicament in mind. So chapter 2 of the book addresses this topic, and there's a very extensive article series in the appendix of the book written by a woman named Amanda Whitman in Vermont on raising kids for a resilient future. In Chapter 3, I explore how we lovingly relate to friends and family and community in these turbulent times. I talk about the human shadow and how important it is to become familiar with our shadow and engage in actively healing it. I talk about the wounding of the masculine and feminine in men and women, and I talk about the soul of community, because in order to endure, communities must have something greater than individual egos as their touchstone. You know, I'm constantly encountering people who say, I really want to go live in an intentional community. And I applaud them for this desire, and I certainly honor and understand this desire. And at the same time, I've heard so many horror stories about people wanting to create intentional communities, or maybe they went to an intentional community and lived there for some months or maybe even some years, and the whole thing fell apart because people could not resolve their issues with each other, which really means they couldn't resolve their issues with themselves. And so this notion of the soul of community is really, really important. Now, what is the soul of community? Well, my answer to that is something I wrote in Chapter 3, which is, it is a desire to be connected with something greater than the egos of other people and the projects in which we might engage with them. Fundamentally, a successful human community is the unfolding of a spiritual dynamic. It can't be contrived or made to happen. Rather, it erupts from our desire for the depths, and that desire is certain to constellate the shadow in ourselves and others. If we follow our longing for community, we must be prepared to do our own shadow work and support others as they do theirs. Ultimately, we touch the soul of community when we savor our own personal story as the story of the universe and the Earth community. The journey of authentic community is also a journey of healing, which is guaranteed to take us deep into the inner world of our own demons and angels, as well as those in the psyches of our community companions. For as Wendell Berry notes, to be healed, we must come with all the other creatures to the feast of creation. And by the way, I'd just like to mention here, as we touch on the topic of community, that many, many people who are aware of collapse and our planetary predicament are feeling incredibly lonely, knowing what they know and not being able to talk with anyone about it. Now, I've spoken with many of you who've contacted me for life coaching around how to live in the world knowing what you know, and how what you know affects the work you do, the relationships you engage in, and your planning for the future. So I'd like to mention that if you feel like life coaching might be helpful to you, you can contact me to talk about that at carolyn@carolynbaker.net or leave a message for me on my Facebook page. Now, I'm certainly not going to attempt to summarize every chapter in depth in the book Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse, but I want to give you a sense of the 16 specific relationships I talk about in the book. I've already done that with some of the relationships, and I also talk about our relationship with work and the work ethic in what Charles Eisenstein calls the sacred economy. That chapter looks at how we revalue our work and creativity in the light of the global crisis. What really is our work in the world at this time of crisis and endings? So I'd like to play a song about connection and relationship. We've got two songs today, and the one I chose from Current Time is the one I'm going to play for you now, and then the next song will be from another era. This one is from Christina Aguilera, I Turn to You.
When I'm lost in the rain, in your eyes I know I'll find the light to light my to win.
I Turn to You by Christina Aguilera, and this is the Lifeboat Hour. I'm your host, Carolyn Baker. We're coming to you live today, and later in the show, we'll be taking callers. But you know, I was listening to that song, and a poem came to mind. One of my favorite little short poems by Rafael Jesus Gonzalez. And this little poem talks about connection, human connection. He says, "The distance between us is holy ground, to be traversed feet bare, arms raised in joyous dance so that it is crossed. And the tracks of our pilgrimage shine in the darkness to light our coming together in a bright and steady light." So that space in between us that we haven't even explored yet is holy ground, because it has the potential of our connecting. And even though that song was light and mellow, the topic of relationships in a time of ecological apocalypse is certainly not about holding hands and dancing around the world singing Kumbaya. Conscious relationship with anyone or anything is very hard work. You know, we're all wounded human beings with all kinds of scars from our relationships with other human beings. And regardless of what kind of relationship it is, it's going to require some work to sustain it. In terms of our relationships with things and activities in our lives, for example, our relationship with work and creativity, we need to view them in a completely new light. In the light of our planetary predicament and how that predicament impacts that relationship. Conversely, how can that relationship assist us as we navigate the collapse of industrial civilization and catastrophic climate change? So what I've been doing is kind of giving you a sense of my book, the one that was just released this last week, Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse, Cultivating the Relationships We Need to Thrive. It has a fabulous cover, by the way, designed by a friend of mine, Chris Kaplan, who lives in New Jersey. And he designed these two people, man and woman, it looks like, holding each other in front of a pretty apocalyptic scenario in the background. And I believe you are really going to enjoy this book, especially if you have been thinking and working and living with collapse. Now, Chapter 5 in the book is about our relationship with resources, both natural resources and financial resources. In that chapter, I talk about moving from entitlement to enoughness. And I propose that the four ways we do that are through what I call the four G's. Practicing gratitude. You know, just gratitude for the little things in our lives. Just the fact that, you know, if you're fortunate enough to have a bed to sleep in at night, that, you know, you get a good night's sleep and you got a warm bed and you're not homeless in the street. And, you know, that you can take a hot shower, that you have food to eat, you know, just for the little things in your life, things that we consider little if we have those things. And we're very fortunate to have them. The second G would be working with our grief. And this is certainly something that I've been focusing on a lot more lately. I just think that one of the most important things we can be doing right now, in addition to taking action, is to really deal with our grief, to look inside and look at how our hearts are broken over the current situation, and allow that grief to take us to a deeper connection with ourselves, with other people, and the Earth community. The third G I talk about is guardianship of some aspect of nature. You know, deciding that, you know, you look at this dying planet and you decide that you're going to take responsibility for some small aspect of the Earth community. Maybe you're doing something to work for the rescue of animals. Or maybe you're doing something to protect natural resources or protect forests or whatever your heart calls you to do. That's a form of guardianship of nature. And then the fourth G is giving back. You know, giving back in whatever ways you can to the rest of the human community and to all sentient beings. Chapter 6 deals with loving our bodies as the world falls apart. And really looks at how important it is in this era of ecological apocalypse to develop a new relationship with the body. To get much more out of our heads and into our bodies, into our animal bodies, as we navigate these turbulent times. And continuing that theme, Chapter 7 is about sacred eating and developing a new relationship with food, or mindful eating as a spiritual practice. In Chapter 8, I talk about loving the time of your life, or lovingly relating to whatever age you are, whether you're younger or older. At whatever age we are as adults, our primary task is to become our true selves. And I end the chapter with these words. The extraction of deep wisdom can be done at any age. And in fact, if we are to love the time of our life, it must be. Embedded within us is the deeper story we came to live. And the core issue at every age for any awakened human being is the extent to which we are living that story in the present moment. Chapter 9 is entitled, What an Animal You Are. Maybe many of us have been playfully called animals from time to time. When I was in college, we used to say, What an Animal You Are. And this chapter focuses on our relationships with animals and with the animal that each of us is. In a later chapter, I talk about how important it is that we fall in love with the earth all over again, or maybe for the very first time. And our intimate connections with animals can help us do this. Right now, particularly as we see some 200 species a day going extinct, we need to practice good manners toward those species and make it as easy for them as possible. Again, back to the idea of guardianship and giving back. The title of Chapter 10 is Darkness Matters, and it's a chapter specifically on shadow work. And I refer the reader to a piece in the appendix that I've included in the appendix of my book, from author Leslie Temple Thurston. She wrote a wonderful book called Marriage of Spirit, which is a manual for integrating the shadow and enhancing our relationships with our own psyches and the Earth community. You know, we wouldn't be in the predicament we're in if humans understood the human shadow and were willing to take responsibility for it. Now, what is a shadow? Well, it's parts of the psyche that we disown, that we split off, that we say, well, that's not me. You know, I'm not this, I'm not that. But the truth is, we are all of those things. And so the shadow work is about looking at all of those parts of us that we disown, developing a relationship with them, and integrating them into the totality of who we are. In fact, I'm currently working on my next book, which is tentatively titled Dark Gold, The Human Shadow and the Alchemy of Global Crisis. Carl Jung said that 80% of the shadow is pure gold, but we're only able to access that gold if we're willing to deal with the darkness. In Chapter 11, the title of that chapter is Ensconced in Eros, Bathed in Beauty. And it emphasizes how to be, quote, driven out of our minds with beauty. And in that chapter, I talk about the need to move beyond the prison of the intellect and into intimate connection with beauty and joy in this time of demise. As pollution, deforestation, ocean acidification, and the extinction of some 200 species a day overwhelm us, it's crucial that we bathe in beauty and earth eroticism, which takes us out of our heads and more tenderly into our hearts. Chapter 12 very naturally follows 11 by focusing on the powers of the universe, in which I summarize a DVD lecture presented by physicist Brian Swim on what the universe actually does and what our role as conscious, self-aware beings is in that process. How can we assist the universe in what it does? Now, of course, ancient and indigenous societies have understood this relationship for thousands of years. But Brian Swim frames this wisdom in scientific terms and offers a new cosmology. At this unprecedented time of ecological apocalypse, we need to understand the 10 powers, because even though we're experiencing an ecological apocalypse, it's not too late to fall back in love with the earth and experience the joy of assisting the earth in what it does, even if neither we or the planet survives. Chapter 13 is entitled Near-Term Extinction and Waking Up to Death. In a book with a title such as this book, Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse, we're compelled to ponder the topic of death. Now, during the past 2 years, I've noticed the word extinction is being used more than I can ever recall. And whether extinction is imminent or centuries away, the fact is that it is ubiquitous in discussions of climate change. And that fact is extremely significant. In fact, the fact that we're always talking about it, or lots of people are talking about it in the background, has an impact on us unconsciously, even if we're unaware of the conversation. In that same chapter 13, I mentioned a YouTube video by a guy named Ryan Cooper entitled Why Climate Change is Not an Environmental Issue. In it, Cooper argues that it's instead an existential issue, which cannot be conveniently labeled as environmental, economic, biological, or as a matter of national security. It's all of these and much more. And as with the collapse of industrial civilization, the possibility of near-term extinction compels us to look at monumental questions of meaning and purpose that we've been unwilling to ask, or maybe we've addressed only peripherally. So I'd like to play another song now about connection. This one is from another era, and here's what Wikipedia says about this song that is entitled, He Was a Friend of Mine. He Was a Friend of Mine is a traditional folk song in which the singer laments the death of a friend. The earliest known version of this song, it was originally called Shorty George, and was first recorded by musicologist couple John and Ruby Terrell Max. And it was recorded in 1939 at the Clemens State Farm in Brazoria, Texas. It was performed originally by an African-American inmate, Sniff Casey, who accompanied himself on the guitar. Alan Lomax described the song as a blues that was a dirge for a dead comrade. So this is a prison song, a song appropriate for the many prisons in which we find ourselves. Here is He Was a Friend of Mine, sung by Willie Nelson.
Was a friend of mine. He was a friend of mine. Every time I think of him, I just can't keep from crying. 'Cause he was a friend of mine. He died on the road. He died on the road. He just kept on moving, never reaped what he could sow. And he was a friend of mine. Been quite satisfied, and he was a friend of mine. He never done no wrong. He never done no wrong. Thousand miles from home, and he never harmed no woman, and he was a friend of mine. Friend of mine, he was a friend of mine. Every time I hear his name, Lord, I just can't keep from crying. 'Cause he was a friend of mine.
That was Willie Nelson singing He Was a Friend of Mine, and I'm your host on the Lifeboat Hour. Carolyn Baker is my name, and in a few minutes we're going to be taking callers. And you can call me and ask any question you like about my book, Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse, or anything else you'd like to ask. But let me say a few more words about the book before we open the lines to callers. This is Friday afternoon, TGIF, and I hope you have a chance to listen to us. Hope you have a chance to call us. The number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Now, in Chapter 14 of Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse, I talk in there about our enculturation as citizens of empire, as opposed to being enculturated as citizens of the earth. The chapter is about walking away from empire as much as we possibly can. You know, it's not totally possible to walk completely away from empire. I don't think that's realistic. But as much as we can, and increasingly adopting the indigenous perspective. It's about moving from the age of separation to the age of reunion, even if that age is very short-lived. In fact, at this moment in all of our lives, no matter how young or old we are, it's all about how we want to live in the time we have left. I'd love to hear from you to just ask questions about the book or make comments or talk about anything else you'd like to. The number is 888-874-4888. Now, the last chapter of the book, chapter 15, is love. Well, actually, this is not the last chapter. It's near the end. It's love in the age of grief, and the actual title of the chapter is Grief and Love in a Culture of Congestive Heart Failure. Now, they tell us that congestive heart failure is one of the number one killers in our culture. And I think that has a whole lot to do with the grief that we're not expressing. As I said, grief is most recently the focus of the work that I'm doing in the world. My friend and colleague Joanna Macy says that the heart that breaks open can contain the whole universe. And my friend Frances Weller, who's a psychotherapist in Northern California and who was on this show twice in 2014, has written the very best book I've ever seen on grief, entitled Entering the Healing Ground, Grief, Ritual, and the Soul of the World. He's got a new book that's coming out in September of this year called The Wild Edge of Sorrow. And in Entering the Healing Ground, Francis talks about the five gates of grief, which are mentioned in my chapter 15, and I explain in that chapter why it is essential that everyone who's awake to our predicament do conscious grief work. The final chapter of Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse deals with our relationship with future generations. Their future is certainly not looking rosy at this point, and perhaps they have no future at all, but I argue that two of the most important things we can be doing for them is telling them stories, stories from indigenous cultures and stories that teach them the ways of past generations that have lived in harmony with the earth. Secondly, we can focus on helping future generations find within themselves the gifts that they came here to give. This isn't about testing their aptitude, but rather taking the attitude of the indigenous elder and helping every young person, find and give the gifts they came here to give. So that's a summary of the book, and you can order it at your local bookstore or online. Again, the title is Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse, Cultivating the Relationships We Need to Thrive. And remember that you can contact me about anything at carolyn@carolynbaker.net or leave a message for me on my Facebook page. I also publish a daily news digest that I'm now going into the 8th year of publishing. This digest is published every single day, 7 days a week, unless I'm traveling. It contains the latest alternative economic news, news about the environment, about geopolitical issues, about civil liberties and civil unrest, news about the culture, and then I have something in this digest that a lot of people don't have in news digests. At the very end, I have a section on options, some of the ways that people are responding to this planetary crisis, some of the ways that they're connecting with each other and with the Earth to make their lives better and more meaningful as they navigate these turbulent times. Well, it looks like we don't have any callers today. I'm disappointed about that, but, you know, I'm sure that as more people become familiar with our new time and the fact that it's a live show again, we're going to get more callers. I just want to thank you so much for being with us today. We'll be back again next Friday on Progressive Radio Network for more conversation and song. Have a great weekend.
The rich get rich, that's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lies.